Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Can atheists defend intelligent design? I'm Casey Luskin, and on this podcast, we're going to once again speak with Professor Bradley J. Montan, Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Colorado Boulder, about his new book, Seeking God in Science, An Atheist Defends Intelligent Design, published by Broadview Press. This is our third interview with Professor Montan. On the first two, we talked about his book and how it tries to accurately define intelligent design and get past many of the common misdefinitions of intelligent design that are out there. And on this podcast, we have Professor Montan back with us to talk about his scientific analysis of intelligent design that he offers in his book. So, Professor Montan, thank you so much for coming back on the show with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, on this podcast, I really want to get into some of the fun stuff, and that is the actual ID arguments. And I know that you were very careful in your definitions of IDs, we talked about in some of the earlier podcasts, to make it clear that ID is not just an argument for design in biology. It also applies within the field of physics and cosmology. And correct me if I'm wrong, but philosophy of physics is something of your area of specialty, is it not?
Right. The way I actually got into thinking about all these intelligent design issues is that I started thinking about the fine-tuning argument, which is a particular science-based argument for the existence of a designer. Because I was thinking about that, and I started thinking about other science-based arguments for the existence of a designer, and that got me thinking about intelligent design generally, and that's how this book arose.
Well, let's start off with talking about this particular issue of ID in physics and cosmology. What do you think are the arguments for ID from the fine-tuning of the laws of physics?
Right. So I think it's interesting to consider what consequences we should draw from the fact that some of the fundamental constants of physics seem to be fine-tuned for life, in the sense that if the value of the constant were slightly different than it actually is, life could not exist in the universe. Some people say that this provides evidence for the existence of God. Other people say this provides evidence for the existence of many universes, where in different universes, the values of the fundamental constants are different. And so in most universes, there wouldn't be life, but in some, there would be. There are a variety of interesting philosophical issues here. Some people, like Richard Dawkins, take the multiple universes hypothesis to basically show that the theistic fine-tuning argument doesn't work. They try to say, no, the fine-tuning evidence doesn't provide any evidence for the existence of God because instead we can postulate multiple universes. And in my book, I show that Dawkins' reasoning is fallacious. Appeal to multiple universes might have some force in showing that the theistic fine-tuning argument is unsuccessful, but they can't prove that the theistic fine-tuning argument is unsuccessful in the sense that one should still take the fine-tuning evidence to provide some evidence for theism, even in the face of the multiple universes hypothesis. I go through it in detail in the book so people can see how it works. Some of these arguments are slightly complicated or sophisticated, but I think that's part of what's interesting about the whole debate, is that sometimes I see people dismiss the fine-tuning argument very simply. Oh, that argument doesn't work because, and then they say something quickly. And it's way more complicated than that. I can explain why the simple dismissals don't work, and one would have to look to more sophisticated arguments if one wants to try to set aside the theistic fine-tuning argument. So the very fact that one can have this sophisticated intellectual discussion with reasonable arguments on both sides, where it's not clear what the resolution is, that already shows that the intelligence design debate is worth taking seriously.
Well, Professor Montan, I agree with you. Your arguments about the evidence for cosmic fine-tuning were very complicated, and I would definitely encourage readers to read the book to really get a good sense for what you're arguing. Sometimes I felt like you had some interesting comments to make. Other times, I was not convinced by a couple of your arguments in particular, one of which was that you critique an argument that William Lane Craig has made, which basically has three parts. It says, premise one, everything that begins to exist has a necessary condition for its existence. Premise two, the universe began to exist. Conclusion, therefore the universe has a necessary condition for its existence. And then, of course, Craig would go on to argue that the necessary condition is God or some kind of a designer. And one of the interesting and surprising things I thought that you challenged premise two, which is that the universe began to exist. And most people who attack, they pretty much leave that one alone. Most people just take it as a given that the universe exists and that it began to exist at some point. So is this a strong objection to this argument? And if so, why do you think it is?
Well, Craig gives two sorts of reasons that he thinks the universe began to exist. He gives philosophical reasons. He thinks that the universe had to begin to exist. And I set those aside for the purposes of my book, though I do happen to think that they're on. And then he also gives empirical reasons that we should think the universe began to exist, namely that the universe started with a Big Bang. And what I try to show is that Craig's appeal to the physics there isn't as strong as one might think. Specifically, what Craig is appealing to is classical general relativity. He's not taking into account quantum effects. He's not taking into account the work that's being done to generate a theory of quantum gravity. And later in Craig's work, he does somewhat take that into account, but I think he doesn't do so adequately. So I try to argue that it's actually a very much an open question whether the universe began to exist. It could well be the case that the universe has been in existence forever. And if the universe has been in existence forever, then that, I think intuitively, that's at least more palatable to an atheist, that one doesn't then have the question of how did the universe come to exist? What, if anything, caused the universe to come to exist?
These are concepts where I admit it's difficult to wrap your mind around. If the universe existed forever, does it still cry out for a cause? Why does the universe exist forever? Maybe quantum gravity, which I'm not very much an expert in, explains this. But, I mean, any comments from you?
They're great philosophical questions. I mean, and we're really getting at, like, sort of the deepest questions in philosophy. Does the universe have to have a reason for its existence? Does it matter whether the universe began to exist or whether it's been in existence forever? These are questions that philosophers have been thinking about for thousands of years, and they're questions where physics seems to potentially have something to say about them. And so I think this is what excites me the most about philosophy. I'm not going to try to give an answer now other than to say it's really fascinating to think about.
Sure. Well, and I would encourage listeners to read the book, Seeking God in Science, An Atheist Defense Intelligent Design, because there's no way that I'm going to summarize your arguments sufficiently, Professor Montin, and I think that people should read the book and think about these issues for themselves, because these are fascinating questions that you talk about. Another issue that you talk about, obviously, is the argument for ID in biology. And you look at the origin of life, and you look at irreducible complexity. Which of those two do you feel is a stronger argument?
So I try not to get into the details of those debates, precisely because so much other literature on intelligent design gets into the details of those debates. But there are certain issues that I think haven't been adequately discussed in the literature, and so those are the ones I take up in the book. Specifically, what hasn't been adequately discussed is the hypothesis that the universe is spatially infinite, and what impact that hypothesis has on the biology-based design arguments. So I argue that if the universe is spatially infinite, that shows that some of the standard biology-based design arguments aren't as successful as people think, but I also show that it doesn't preclude one from giving a biology-based design argument in principle. Now, I'm not saying that the universe definitely is spatially infinite, but it is a hypothesis that is a reasonable one to consider, given the evidence that we have from physics, and I think it does have impact on the biological debate. And this is a point that hasn't been made in the literature before, so that's one reason I'm excited about that portion of my book.
It's kind of like the multiverse hypothesis in a certain sense, in that you're just trying to increase your probabilistic resources to account for highly unlikely events. And
right.
So in that sense, is it subject to any of the same criticisms of the multiverse hypothesis?
It's subject to some of the criticisms, but not others. And I take issue with some of the stuff that Behe says. Behe has discussed the multiverse and how it relates to his arguments, but Behe has not discussed my hypothesis being that this universe is spatially infinite. Behe hasn't discussed how that relates to his arguments. So I point out that some of Behe's complaints about the multiverse don't apply to my argument about the single universe that we're in being spatially infinite. For example, one of the standard complaints about the multiverse is that we can't get evidence for the other universes. And that may well be right, but we can get evidence that our universe is spatially infinite. We don't have conclusive evidence, but we can get some evidence for that, or so I argue in the book.
Well, Professor Montin, we talked in the previous podcast about blogging heads and how people are trying to take down Behe's interviews there. I personally think that a debate on blogging heads that I think would be fascinating would be to see you have a dialogue with Bruce Gordon, who is here at the Discovery Institute and also has a background in philosophy of physics. I think that this would be an absolutely fascinating subject for you guys to talk about, because me not being an expert, you know, would love to listen to experts like the two of you talk about these questions of the nature of the universe and whether or not the universe is infinite or eternal or finite and all of these deep questions that you're raising right now. I want to close this interview out with a discussion of your view on education. And one of the things I really like about your book is that you state from the outset, and this is a point that many critics either just ignore or miss somehow, is that Discovery Institute does not favor mandating ID in public schools. And we've been very clear on this, I think, for those who are willing to listen. And I appreciate the fact that you were very much listening to that point because people often miss that point. So you close your book talking about education. So let's ask the big question that often gets people most riled up. How do you think this issue should be dealt with in public schools or at least in education in general? How do you think that this topic of origins and evolution and intelligent design should be dealt with?
I think it's a complicated issue, but I think that there are situations where it would be appropriate to talk about intelligent design in the science classroom. And I don't think it's unconstitutional to do so. But even if it is unconstitutional, fundamentally, what we should care about is pedagogy. We should care about how best to educate our students, how best to make them productive and well-reasoning citizens in the world. And the best way to do that could well be to talk about intelligent design in the science classroom. Now, that does not mean that we would be teaching intelligent design as true. I don't know anyone out there who thinks we should do that in the science classroom. And that does not mean that we would be giving intelligent design equal time. And again, I don't think that's even part of the contemporary debate nowadays. And sometimes people talk about this issue where they focus on equal time, where they focus on, well, we shouldn't tell students that intelligent design is true. And yeah, I mean, no one's really saying that. What they want is the students to know that there is a debate, that some people disagree with the standard naturalistic evolutionary story and have alternative ideas. And I think it would be worth letting students know that. It could be helpful for the students to see arguments for and against the different views that people have. And it's okay for the students to know that most all scientists think that the evolution-based intelligent design arguments are wrong. But given that the students will often be hearing anti-evolutionary views from their family or from their pastor. I mean, if you just look at American opinion polls, you can see that most Americans are not on board with naturalistic evolutionary theory, providing a full account for life on Earth. And given that most people think otherwise, I think it's worth talking about those views. It could be worth talking about those views in the classroom.
Well, Professor Montan, we appreciate the work that you have done to write this book. I think it's a very thoughtful book, and I think that our listeners should definitely check it out because it's a unique book, and you won't find anything else like it out there. It's titled, again, Seeking God in Science, An Atheist Defends Intelligent Design, published recently by Broadview Press. Again, Professor Bradley J. Montan, Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Colorado Boulder, is the author, and I really appreciate the time that you've taken to talk about these issues and your new book on the podcast with us, Professor Montan.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. This has been great.
Well, we look forward to your next book on this topic and the further work you're going to be doing. Again, Professor Montan also has a blog. It is bradleymontan.wordpress.com, or you can check out his homepage, which is bradleymontan.com. So, Professor Montan, thanks again for talking about these issues with us. I'm Casey Luskin with the ID of the Future podcast. Don't forget the book is titled Seeking God in Science, An Atheist Defends Intelligent Design. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.